He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in Him will I trust. We have nothing to fear for the future, except as we shall forget the way the Lord has led us and is teaching in our past history.
This is Sam. We call him Sam because we don't know whether he's a Samantha or whether he's a Samuel. And that will be decided when he lays an egg or not. So for the moment, he's just Sam.
Every time that God opens doors that seem to be permanently closed, you get a little bit more
of his character
and faith in him.
Yes.
And you start trusting in him. And then when we started evangelizing together with Uncle Frenchy, we were so surprised to find that the greatest opposition to evangelization didn't come from the world, but came from the church. They were not always on the same wavelength. They weren't on the same page. And no matter what you talked about, whether you talked about the benefits of a plant-based diet, there were so many that were opposed to it that they would make the most noise. Whereas the people from outside, like the New Agers, and no matter what they were enthusiastic. But the church people weren't always enthusiastic, and neither were the leaders.
Well, in fact, we were the first ones to start a fully plant-based diet in those days.
In those days, yes.
Yes.
And so then when I was invited to Germany and started speaking on that, again, the opposition from within was greater than the opposition from without. And you read those statements in the spirit of prophecy which say, we have more to fear from within than from without. And it suddenly becomes a reality. But every time you think that you've come to a dead end, God opens a door and he opens up a window. And in those 15 years that I worked at the university, every vacation, every weekend, we would evangelize somewhere. Mm. And in the university vacations, we would go to all the parts of the world, whether it was Australia. I had one sabbatical year, remember?
Yes.
And we did a world tour.
Well, actually, you did all the other
trips on your own. That was the first time that I was able to go with you. It was 2002, and we did basically all the continents, and we learned a lot.
And other people had to take care of our children.
Yes.
And it reminded us of those pioneer days of this church, where all of those things took place. And wherever we came, there was opposition, tremendous opposition.
Yeah.
And for those 15 years, we evangelized, did a full-time work at the university. You taught at the schools. And we paid the debt that we had. And we made a plan to get out of debt. Remember that we built a house?
Yes.
And how long did it take us?
I think it was 3 years.
Which we had no laborers. Mm-hmm. We did it ourselves. And I would do the inner construction, and you were?
I would paint and do tiling.
You did all the tiling in the house and the painting. And in those times when it was often very hard because you got so much opposition from particularly the church, you had two dreams that were very relevant to us and meant a lot to us, and we mulled them over as to what they meant. They were too crystal clear in order to be random dreams.
Yeah.
What was the first dream you had?
We didn't, at that stage, we didn't want to tell anybody about a dream because people would think, oh, they think they are, you know,
they think they're in the category of prophets or something. No, we never thought that, and we never were. And we never are. But that doesn't mean that God can't encourage you with a dream.
I think it was to encourage us, just
for us personally.
For us personally. The first one I had was you and I were walking, actually, I was walking with another woman ahead of you down a lane, and there were trees on the side, and they looked like citrus orange trees type of tree, and some had fruit on and some had beautiful flowers, and they were all green, beautifully green. And then I went close to one of the trees with that had flowers on, and as I tried to pick a flower, a huge adder with a horned adder came out, and it bit me in the hand. And I screamed and I called you, and you said, and you came and you ran and you took this adder off me and you threw it back into the bush, and it went in, became a tiny little snake.
A puny little snake.
Puny little snake. And you said, don't worry, it can't hurt you. And then I looked at the trees and I saw, but wait, some of these trees were beautifully green and they had fruit, but some were green. But if you look underneath the foliage, and they had flowers, and you look underneath these flowers, it was a dead tree. So some trees were dead. They just looked good.
Because it had been overgrown by a vine-like climber.
A vine climber, and inside this vine was this snake. And for many years, we didn't know what it meant. And then later, I read that a tree symbolizes a man, a person, and that the church is the vineyard, or the orchard is the church.
So in this orchard, there are different people. Some of them are true living trees with fruit, and some of them are dead but look beautiful.
Yes.
But in them hides the sting of the serpent.
Yes. And so it encouraged us to understand why some people in the church would want to hurt us, would want to be mean to us, would want to
criticize,
even take you to court for what you said. It helped us. And the other dream was also a very interesting dream. I dreamt you bought a house for us to to move into. And we opened the front door, and the whole house was covered in a thick layer of mud and dirt and stuff. And I said, we can't move into this house. And you said, what's happened here? I don't know what's wrong with this place, but I don't know what happened here. And I said, I can't move into this house. And then the next minute you gave me a spade, and you took a spade as well, and you said, well, let's clean it up. And I said, I can't clean it up. It's too much work. And you said, just clean it up. And so we both started to dig and to clean up the place.
Shovel out the dirt.
And then we came down onto the floor. And as I cleaned the floor, I saw that it was a beautiful floor. It looked like gems and stones, sparkling, beautiful. And we realized that that house is also the church, and that it is covered in dirt, and we have to clean it up. We have to
shovel out the dirt. There must come a shaking, and then the floor can shine.
Because it's so beautiful. The church has such beautiful truth, and it's so precious, and it's God's, the apple of God's eye. It's a beautiful church, but it's been covered by the devil in dirt. And so that encouraged us too.
Yes. Now, I don't normally dream any significant dreams.
But you had one.
But I had one dream that I don't think I've ever told.
No.
Have I told it?
No, I don't think so.
My father used to own a house, and he owned the property next door, which he rented out for an income. So they were basically both my father's houses while he was still alive. And I dreamt of those houses, and I dreamt that I was coming home. So basically I was going to my father's house. And as I came into to the house, I couldn't get in, because in front of his house, in the yard, in the garden, in the front garden of his house, was a huge mound with a moat around it. And on this mound was a massive serpent, the biggest snake I've ever seen in my life. And the expression on the snake's face was one to behold, like a sly,
smug
grimace on that face, disgusting to look at. And around them, this moat was full of blood. And in this blood were the bones of dead people. And no matter how I would try to get into my father's house, the snake kept me away. It was too huge to fight. So I thought to myself, well, if I can't get in to this one where my father actually lives, I'm going to go into the other one, which is also my father's house. And there was another mound with another snake. Not as big as the first one, but a pretty impressive snake. And it also had a mean look on it. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, how am I going to get into this house? And then our cat, remember our cat that had the orange ginger one where the feet went click, click, click.
Oh, that one.
That one. That one was sitting in the sun close to the second snake. I don't know, in the dream it was just sitting there. And it looked so self-satisfied, and it was basking in the sun, and the feet were going, just too lovely, basking in the sun there. And then I saw the second snake go towards it. And I tried to warn it. And I said, come here, come here, come here. Psst, 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 psst. Come here, come here, come out of the way. Get out of the way. That snake is going to catch you. But he was so happy basking in the sun. And I thought to myself, you're going to get hurt. You're going to get hurt. What am I going to do? And the next minute, that snake took the cat. The cat didn't have a chance. And I got so angry. I took a big club And I went and I bashed that snake. But it was too big. I couldn't kill it. And it slid away at a speed. And it went and snuck up against the other snake. And it lay there against the snake and said to me, "Well, try and get me now. I'm here under the protection of the second snake, the big mama snake. What are you going to do now?" And I woke up. And I thought to myself, "Now, what can that mean?" Two serpents, one very large, one smaller. And I don't know whether I'm right in my interpretation, but as far as I can figure it out, is that the one represents the mother of all the churches, drunk with the blood of the saints, the moat of blood around it, with the bones of the saints in it. And the other one represents the false prophet, the fallen churches. And the one basking in the sun is my church, feeling perfectly safe close to the second snake, just basking in the sunshine of acceptance. Nothing's going to happen to me. And that second snake, that false prophet, when, if you don't watch it, is going to get you. So can you sit in an ecumenical council? And then when the trouble comes, that snake will go and cuddle up against the big one and say, "We are one in the ecumenical council."
But at least you got a stick.
I got in a couple of bashes. Oh, I actually bashed the big one too, but it was too big for me to cope with. So actually, that's the story of our life, trying to tell God's true people, don't go and bask close to the snakes. Mm-hmm. They're going to get you. You might think you're quite safe there, sitting in the sunshine, basking in the acceptance that you get from them, but they're going to get you. Mm-hmm. Stay away. And they were guarding the house, the way to my father's house. And in the same way, those serpents, those two snakes, the beast and the false prophet, are preventing people from coming to their father's house. And if we do not act accordingly, and if we do not accept or understand what the circumstances are, we can be caught just like that poor cat. But those are the only dreams that we had that were of any real significance.
It was just to encourage us that
we were to carry on.
We were to carry on and never give up.
Never give up.
Even if you see that your church is doing what it shouldn't be doing, you carry
on. That doesn't mean that you should stop presenting the warning. The warning is, come away from that snake. Come away from that snake. Please, please just come away from that snake. It's going to hurt you. Mm. And let's hope that some listen and come away from the snake.
When the church stand as God's chosen people should, they will be a peculiar people, zealous of good works. There will be no slackness, no concord with Belial. Oh, that we could realize what God's people might now be, had they kept themselves in His love, without any compromise with evil. And had retained the peculiar character that distinguished them and separated them from the world. In experience, in wisdom, in true holiness, they would be years in advance of what they now are.
finally, after having built that house, we sold it and we got completely out of debt.
Yes.
And we made a promise. And we said, Lord, if we humanly can in any way, then we promise that we will stay debt-free. And if we can't afford something,
don't buy it.
We won't buy it. And we had so little money left to buy a house that there was no house in the market at that price. In fact, it was about half of what the cheapest houses were. And in the book, you tell the story.
Mm-hmm. About the chameleon.
About the chameleon. And how picking up a chameleon can give you a house at half the value. Amazing stories. God is so faithful. It's unbelievable.
God has taken us out of places where we thought that we were not going to get out of it.
Yes.
And he took us out every time.
And the opposition that we got because of our diet was so amazing, remember? And then at the university, I had the opportunity to do all that research. And I had so many students and received a grant from the Royal Society in order to educate all these students and bring them into the field of science and education. And the research that we did was on health and the effect of animal protein on the physiology of not only humans but also animals. And one of the projects came about in a very interesting way. A man came to me and he said, I watched one of your lectures where you say that protein, animal protein, has a negative effect on calcium balance. And I said, yes, I gave that lecture. He says, well, we in the industry have sheep that if they are fed in a stall, they develop skew legs. What do you think is the cause of that? And I said, I don't know. What do you feed the sheep? And he said, what they feed them lucerne and grains and animal protein, either fish meal or carcass meal. And I said, it's the animal protein that's causing the problem because it adds a high acid load and that leaches out the calcium. And he says, no, I don't think it can be that. Protein is protein. I said, no, animal protein is the one that's causing it, not the plant protein. And then he said, well, shall we do an experiment and see? So I said, yes, and we applied for money to do the research project. And the government agency that provides those grants said, you're crazy. We're not going to give you money for this. Protein is protein. And there's no logic in saying that the animal protein causes the problem. And so we went back to the drawing board and I said, I have some research funds of my own in the university. I'm willing to sacrifice those for the task. And he had some. We put it together and we tested it and we divided them up into groups, and lo and behold, those that received animal protein had the skewed leg syndrome and bone deterioration, and those that received the same amount of protein from a plant base had no problem. That was one of the things that convinced me that we were on the right track. And the more we became convinced that we were on the right track, and the more we read in the spirit of prophecy that that was the diet that God wanted his people to follow, the more opposition we got. And eventually I learned, Sonika, that the greater the opposition, the greater the likelihood that you are on the right track. So opposition became an incentive. Was it hard for you sometimes?
Of course it was hard for me. And it was hard for our children as well, because they were ostracized. They were mocked for their diet at school. And
this is now a church school, not a secular school. In fact, when we took them out and took them to a secular school, they were praised for their diet.
Yes, yes, exactly. There was a vegetarian society in the government school. But yes, but somehow God had fixed that in our minds, that this is the way that he wants us to live. And every time we studied the writings of Ellen White, it was confirmed.
God's commandment-keeping people will not eat anything that comes from an animal. Even milk and eggs will be given up because disease is increasing in proportion to the wickedness of men.
And God gave us that advice for our own protection so that we can live healthily and have a clear mind and understand what he's trying to tell us. If we disobey, then we cannot have the benefits of what God promised us.
And if you look at what the Bible teaches, and you see how the Israelites rebelled against the diet that God gave them, then the parallel between the Israel today, the anti-typical spiritual Israel, and the literal Israel in those days is actually very striking. And throughout it all, one has to learn that God's way is the best way. And through my research that I did, through our own lifestyle, through the attacks that came from all sides, we became confirmed that this is the truth. Mm-hmm. And once you have established it and you have lived it, we've lived it now for 38, 39 years. Then you become so settled in that truth that you cannot be moved.
I am so grateful to God for what he has done for us. You and I would have been dead long ago.
Yes, many times.
Many times.
May God get the glory for all of that.
God has been extremely good to us, and we are so grateful. People, we have been given the work of making known the principles of health reform. There are some who think that the question of diet is not of sufficient importance to be included in their evangelistic work, but such make a great mistake. God's word declares, "Whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God." Today, men in positions of trust have decisions to make upon which depend results of great importance. Often they have to think rapidly, and this can be done successfully by those only who practice strict temperance. The mind strengthens under the correct treatment of the physical and mental powers.
Sonika, our children in particular didn't always have an easy time, right?
No, they were young and they were suddenly taken out of the world that they knew and plunged into a world that we accepted, that we were converted in. But they hadn't gone through a conversion. They didn't understand yet. They didn't even know who God was. And then Tanya had a dream when she was about 8 years old, our daughter. And
she was the one that had it the hardest because they were mocking her at school because she was brought vegetarian food.
Yes, and she was very sensitive. She
very
still
sensitive
is sensitive.
Eventually, she wouldn't eat in front of anyone. Mm. She used to go and hide herself in the washrooms or the toilets and eat there. And she almost suffered a breakdown as a consequence. And then she had a dream.
Yes, and then she had a dream. She was about eight, and she was walking with her teacher. Now, I don't know which teacher, but she was walking with her, and they saw a beautiful park, and there was a wall around this park, and she wanted to go into the park. And so they went and walked around this wall until they got to a gate. And at the gate, there were two guards standing there. And they wanted to go in through the gate. And then the guard said, "No, you can't go in. You must first drink this." And so she and the teacher got a cup. And she looked into this cup, and there was a little lamb swirling in some fluid. And she said, "I can't drink this." And the guard said, "You have to drink this before you can go in through the gate into the beautiful land on the other side." And so she started drinking it, and it was bitter. She said it was so bitter, and she didn't know whether she could finish it. And then she woke up, and then she knew that the park was heaven. The gods were the angels that guarded the gates.
The cherubims
that guarded the gates. And before she could enter, before all of us could enter, she had to drink that bitter cup, the bitter draught, with a little lamb swirling in there.
She had to drink him too.
She had to drink the little lamb as well. And so she was only eight. She didn't know anything about Christ, the lamb, or about the bitter draught or anything like that. Only years later did she understand that what it meant.
And the Passover lamb had to be eaten with bitter herbs.
The herbs, yes.
So we have to internalize the lamb, the character of the lamb, and it's going to be a bitter draught. This is not an easy road.
Not an easy road.
And her life has not been easy.
No.
My heart goes out to her many, many times. She has many, many tears in many, many bottles.
Mm.
And maybe God will look at the bottles one day and say, enough tears in these bottles.
Yes, and then there will not be no more tears in heaven. Once she gets into that garden,
there will be no more tears. Yes.
This is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith. Faith sees Jesus standing as our mediator at the right hand of God. Faith beholds the mansions that Jesus has gone to prepare for those who love him. Faith sees the robe and the crown all prepared for the overcomer. Faith hears the song of the redeemed and brings eternal glories near. We must come close to Jesus in loving obedience if we would see the King in his beauty.
And we've had quite a number of experiences where there have been many, many tears. I don't know. I dreamt about a cat. And I think you are a cat with nine lives. Because there were many, many times when you were at the point of death. And there were always times when I was involved in campaigns.
Yeah.
And I remember that I would say to you, "I can't leave you. I can't go and do this campaign because I don't even know if I will see you when I come back from the campaign, even if it's one night. I remember the one night you were in hospital and the doctor didn't have much hope that you would survive that night. And I said to you, I'm not going, I'm staying with you. And you said, no, I must go. God will take care of you. And I went, and God did take care of you.
Yes. Yes, and that was such an important campaign, because at the end of that campaign, there were people baptized that later became evangelist himself, the person.
Correct. But it took you months and months to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go to work, and you lay in the bed, and you had no strength, you couldn't move. And I used to bring you some food and put it next to your bed so that you could eat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would go. And how God comforts people is just amazing.
Yeah, I was depressed, actually, because, you know, I was a healthy person, and then suddenly I was an invalid almost. And I was still asking God, if this is my doing, did I do something wrong that this happened to me?
Because that's what people would say.
Yes.
If something bad happened to you,
then it's
like
you
the
did
time
something.
You broke your hip or whatever, they would say, well, what did you do wrong?
Yes.
That's the first thing they say.
The first thing they said to me, what did you do wrong? Why is God punishing you? And so I was depressed at that stage, and I was, that one morning, you had left, the children had gone to school, and I took the food that you gave me, and you had given me some bread and avocado and fruit, and I heard something. Now, we had a big German Shepherd dog, and he was lying there, and I could hear, it wasn't a noise that he made, and we had a cat, and the cat was sleeping, and so I heard some kind of a sound, and the next minute I saw down the passage came a little squirrel towards me. And the squirrel had passed the dog, it had passed the cat, and they didn't wake up.
Or they didn't react.
Or they didn't react, because normally they would chase another animal. And so the squirrel came up to my bed, and it jumped right onto the bed, and I thought, whoa, I've never seen this before, it's a wild animal. And it came right up, I had the plate on my lap, and it came right up to the plate and started to put its paws on the plate like this, and it looked at me. And I said to him, are you hungry? And I pushed a piece of bread towards him with avocado, and he took it and he started eating it. And then he finished it and went and lay on the couch and slept in the sun.
And where was it?
It was at the window of the couch. And the proof that he was there was the footprints of the squirrel, the green footprints of the avocado on the bed. And then after he'd slept for a few minutes, he got up and went out again. And again, past the dog, past the cat, they didn't see it. And so the next day, I started eating my bread again, and here comes the squirrel again, up on the bed, and I gave him his piece. And this went on for weeks until I was able to get up and go outside. And the very last day when I was up and I went outside and I looked up the oak tree, and there was the squirrel, and it was looking at me. And it came down the oak tree, ran up my leg, onto my shoulder and down the other leg and back up the tree. And then it was gone. I never saw it again. So it basically just came and said goodbye.
So it encouraged you.
It encouraged me, because I have never experienced such a miracle before, that God can use an animal.
I remember that God used, and you love animals. I know you love animals.
Yes.
So he used squirrels and he used birds.
Yes, another occasion he sent a bird to me. When I broke my hip, the bird came in through the window and it sat on the pillow next to me. And it just hopped around and then went out and came back again.
Wild bird.
Wild bird from nowhere.
So God takes care of our feelings through the small things in life.
Yes.
But they are so unusual that they are, you cannot rationally say that this is chance.
No, it's definitely not chance. And there I realized that God is a God of the small things too. I mean, he can make mountains disappear. He can move lakes. He can do anything, whirlwinds, fire. But he's in the small voice. He's in the small things too. And that's where you meet God, when he is quiet and you can listen to him.
And it's experiences like that that tell you that God is in the equation. Now, whenever a big campaign came along, I would actually shudder because I knew something was going to happen again.
Oh, yeah.
And normally it did. And I was so angry because I felt that God was permitting the soft target to be attacked. Why not bash me? Why bash you?
Because you were already strong. I had to be made strong. I was weak. And God had to make me strong through trials. While on earth, there will be no escape from conflicts and temptations. But in every storm, we have a sure refuge. Jesus has told us, "In the world, ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." The forces of Satan are marshaled against us, and we have to meet a diligent foe. But if we take heed to the admonition of Christ, we shall be safe. Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation.
But I learned to trust that God will take care of it. And no matter what field I went into, I never looked for the fields. But the fields came to me, like my research on health, for example. I was thrust into it through miraculous things. I mean, the milk and cheese issue. You got sick, remember, and your ears...
My eardrum burst.
Your eardrums burst, and you got terribly sick, and somebody said, "It's the dairy." And I said, "Nonsense, it can't be the dairy. Dairy is good for you." Then we read in the Spirit of Prophecy that dairy is not good for you and cheese should never enter the human stomach. Mm-hmm. And what is this all about? And then in my research, we researched it and lo and behold, there it was.
Mm-hmm.
So being of this kind of mind where I would have to have proof for something, God miraculously always provided the proof.
And the funny thing is God put you back in the university where you could do the research. If you'd been on the farm, you
wouldn't have done the research. It wouldn't have meant anything. And this research is published in reputable journals.
It's important.
So nobody can say it wasn't done.
Mm-hmm.
And it had co-workers and co-supervisors. And it's amazing how God worked. And so when the whole issue of the occult world in which we were involved was raised and the miraculous ways in which we received information about Freemasonry and all of these things, that we were astounded. And when we started talking about these things, why did we start talking about them? Well, the reason was we were steeped in atheism. Shouldn't atheists be reached?
Mm-hmm, of course.
And what about occultists? Shouldn't they be reached? Shouldn't people that are in false religions be reached? Is there any difference between a false religion and one that worships Satan directly? A deception is a deception. And if you can get the people to believe the truth, then it's worth the while. Mm-hmm. And if you do it, you will have opposition.
It almost looks like God had planned our life ahead of time. Took me from the occult world, took you from the evolution world, and put us together, and now we were on a path where he knew that we would have to speak about these things, and this would reach other people who were also in those deceptions.
Yes. Now, unfortunately, as a result, we would talk about things that other evangelists would not talk about, and mm-hmm. as soon as you touch a new subject, yeah. well, then you are in trouble. Because everybody comes down on you like a ton of bricks.
And because you speak about these things, they say you are too hard and you don't have love. That was the one thing that they always said.
They always said you don't have love.
You don't have enough love. You should only speak about love and about Jesus and his love.
But I remember one day I gave a lecture, and it was in a church, in a big church. And it was a whole series of lectures, actually. And there were many people, and sometimes new faces pitched up. And you would ask yourself, why wasn't he here yesterday? Because yesterday laid the groundwork for today's lecture. Now, what am I going to do? Here's a whole bunch of new people. Am I going to repeat everything I said yesterday? And then I came to the conclusion, you can't repeat everything all the time. And I said to myself, if God saw fit that these people should come to this lecture and not have the preparation of the others, then I must trust that he has his reasons. Maybe the other lectures would put them off. I don't know what the reason is, why they would come halfway through a series. And I was giving a lecture on the New Age movement. Mm. And I just finished the lecture on the New Age movement when one of these brand new people in the audience jumped up, ran to the front, and jumped like the lame man that had just been healed. And he literally jumped up and down and shouted to the people and said, "This is the truth." He was a New Ager. Mm. And he needed that lecture. And he came out.
And he had no other previous lectures.
No other lectures. And he accepted the full truth because he got that lecture and not another one that wouldn't have interested him.
And then the people would say to you, but that's too hard. You can't give
that
lecture.
You can't say that. You mustn't say that.
But you do reach people that need it.
Exactly. And then we were in a city in the United States that was known to be a Freemason city. And we did a campaign and 35 precious people accepted the truth. And then I was told by the church leaders that I was never allowed to speak on these issues. And I could show them in the spirit of prophecy where it says that when we study the book of Revelation, it will teach us to steer clear of secret societies. And I said, what do you do with that? So if you study the book of Revelation, it'll teach you to steer clear of secret societies, then surely secret societies are involved. No, you may not preach on this issue. And you receive so many threats and so many negative comments that you want to become discouraged at some stage.
Yeah. When you started going overseas with your lectures, nobody had ever heard anything that you were preaching. It was totally new for them. And so that's why they opposed you. They had never heard these things before. But can you remember the time when the brethren overseas came down on you very hard, and you came back, and we were still on the farm? And what happened? Remember how you reacted?
Yes, I was very discouraged, and I sat in a chair for a number of weeks, just basically staring ahead and saying to myself, I don't know why I should take this. Why should I be bashed like this every time I open my mouth? I'm not going to do this anymore. And I basically said to God, I'm done. I'm done. And then I read Jeremiah. And I read that Jeremiah said, I'm not going to speak in this name anymore. They treated him so badly. And he said, I'm not going to do this. I'm done. I'm not going to speak in your name anymore. And then he adds the verse, ah, but your word was a fire in my heart and I could not. And so he started preaching again, and basically the same with me. But I realized that I had built up an animosity towards some of the leaders because of the way in which they treated me and the way in which they would twist my words in my mouth and make me the most evil thing under the sun and tell me that I was doing this for money and nothing else. I was just a charlatan. Meantime, I had this burning desire to get people out of error. I used to, you know, our situation. Mm-hmm. We're doing it for money, and we had no money. And often we gave the last we had in order to do it. I slept on floors. I did everything to do this, and then they would come with these accusations. And it got to the point where I hated them.
We must soon wrestle with the powers of the land, and we have every reason to fear that falsehood will gain the mastery. We shall call upon our churches in the name of the Lord to view this struggle in its true light. It's a contest between the Christianity of the Old and New Testaments and the Christianity of human tradition and corrupt fables. Let God's people take heed that they do not sign a truce with the enemy of God and man. The church is not to come down to take a position with the world in its ideas, opinions, and maxims. Hear the words of Christ through his servant Paul. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord has Christ with Belial? Or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel?
God spoke to me when I sat there staring ahead of me with all this animosity in me. And I read Jeremiah and I...
And you went up the mountain.
And then one day I said, God, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. You have to help me. And I went up to the mountain and I said to you, I'm going to go for a walk in the mountain. And I walked right up the mountain and I sat on a rock and I poured out my heart to God. And basically I got this strong impression, you can't preach if you hate. You can't. Because all of those people that treat you like that are my children too. And what did Jesus do? Jesus said, Lord, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Mm-hmm. And those that rejected him and crucified him and spat on him and pulled out his beard, he sat there, he stood there on the Mount of Olives and he looked down and He wept, the shortest verse in the Bible. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often would I have taken you under my wings like a mother hen her chicks, and you would not. So what did he feel for those that reviled him? He felt pity.
Sympathy. Because he knew that the devil had clouded their minds. They couldn't discern what is from God and what is not from God.
Correct. And they had tried to take me to court, and they had accused me at the highest level. And these people that were doing it were involved in ecumenical councils and were attending Jesuit retreats. And I was just sick and tired of them. And the Lord put all of these thoughts into my mind on that mountain, and I said in the end, so what you are telling me is I must turn my animosity into pity.
This world is not the Christian's heaven. It is the place in which to fit up for heaven. It is the scene of our life battles, our conflicts and sorrows. While here we must, if we would be successful, have a firm grasp of the better world, where, when the warfare is ended, will be found peace and everlasting joy. Sorrows, I have endured them. I am acquainted with your struggles. I've experienced them. I know your temptations. I have encountered them. I've seen your tears. I also have wept. Your earthly hopes are crushed, but let the eye of faith be uplifted and penetrate the veil, and there anchor your hopes. The everlasting assurance shall be yours that you have a friend that sticketh closer than a brother.
And I said, okay, if you will help me, then I will try and do that. And since that day, I felt sorry for them, because they know not what they do, because they're not fighting against flesh and blood. They're not fighting against me. They're fighting against the principles of God. It's God who says, come out and be separate. God doesn't say, I want you in an ecumenical council. It's God that says, I want you on a healthy lifestyle. It's God that says, stay away from the occult world. Don't go to those that peep and mutter. Shall the living consult the dead? It's God who says these things. It's not me who's saying these things. So if I take the rap for it, then it's not me that's getting the rap. It's the truth that's getting the rap.
And if you get the rap for the cause, then it actually improves your spirituality.
Yes, and many times I thought, why should I stay in this church? And I remember the words of Jesus, do you also want to go? Ah, but you have the words of eternal life. This church has the truth.
Mm.
And if the truth is the truth, the way and the life, the word and the commandments, but they don't live it, that does that make it less of the truth?
No.
No, truth is truth, right?
The work of pruning and purifying the people of God for heaven is a great work, and it will not be accomplished without great suffering on the part of the servants of God, because it will cost them something to bring their wills into harmony with the will of Christ. We must go through the furnace till the fires have consumed the dross and we are purified so that we reflect the divine image. Christ was the exalted and glorious commander of heaven, before whom the angelic hosts bowed in adoration. Yet he condescended to give up his glory that he had with the Father, that he might save a fallen race. And shall we, in our turn, refuse to deny ourselves for his sake and the gospel's? Let the words of Paul be the language of our hearts. God forbid that I should glory, save in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom the world is crucified unto me, and I unto the world.
Then you say to yourself, is it everybody? And then your dream.
My dream?
Yes, your dream. Many of the trees are actually full of flowers, but they're dead.
Yes.
But that doesn't make the other trees dead that are full of fruits. Have you met people in this church that bear fruit?
Beautiful people. Most people we've met are beautiful Christian people.
I've met more beautiful people in this church than I've ever met in my life. Mm. And I've met more horrible people in this church than I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
But Manasseh, who sawed Uzziah in half, is he going to be in heaven?
He'll be in heaven.
He'll be in heaven, right?
Yes, yes.
So what if one of those revilers is actually in heaven? What will you do?
Exactly.
Say, what the heck are you doing here? Or will you go and give him a hug and say, I'm so glad you're here too?
Yeah.
So this church has the truth. And I believe it has the truth. And yes, it has some dead trees. And it has some false trees. And it has some who are just not there yet and don't understand and need a lot of love and attention and a hug too and compassion, and they will get there. So I always said, put glue on your posterior and sit.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that you have to attend apostate sermons. It just means that you stay in the body of Christ.
Yeah.
Because that's where the truth is.
The most trying experiences in the Christian life may be the most blessed. The special providences of the dark hours may encourage the soul in the future attacks of Satan and equip the soul to stand most fiery trials. The trial of our faith is more precious than gold. But in order to endure the test, you must have that faith, that abiding confidence in God, that will not be disturbed by the arguments and temptations of the deceiver.
Did the same happen at the university where you were? Or did you also find that they were aggressive or mean to you?
No, my colleagues were all evolutionists. I was head of a zoology department. Do you think they loved it that I stood for creation?
No.
No, they tried to undermine me wherever they could. And God was so gracious for 15 years. He allowed one incident after the other. Sometimes it took a whole year where I was accused of something that wasn't true. And it would take a whole year for such a story to be set straight. And every time that the story was set straight, then things went well. Or sometimes I was accused and the students would come up for me.
Mm-hmm. Especially the Muslim students.
Yeah, especially the Muslim students. And it was amazing to me that students such as those would be the ones that would go and stand in the breach and protect you. And how God would remove opposition. I mean, it's amazing. You wrote some of the stories in the book, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
It's absolutely incredible.
One of the most amazing stories was when your colleague accused you and there was to be a hearing.
Yes.
That story is amazing.
And he was to be the witness, the judge, and the executioner. And as he held his piece of paper with all his accusations on it in his hand, he fell over unconscious, and they carried him away. A young, fit man. And they had to have the hearing without him. And they read the list of accusations, and I said, but that's not how it was. Why don't we call in the witnesses? Why don't we call the students themselves? And I found out where in what class they were, whether they were in whatever academic class at the moment, most of them. And we managed to arrange that they came over to witness to the panel. And I was completely exonerated. But things got so tough eventually that I said to the university, I do not want to work under these circumstances anymore. And so they asked me, please not to leave, but to transfer to the medical faculty. And so for the last 4 years, I was professor in the medical faculty, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And then the opportunity came where we could retire because the government wanted certain regulations in place where the old guard had to make way for the new guard, and so we could retire at a much earlier age than normal. And my evangelism had become so large that eventually I retired
full time
and went into evangelism full time. Mm. The Lord is very good to us, and many times when I was away on evangelism, you would be alone.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to sit with all the trials and tribulations and the children and quite a number of little disasters that struck you. Eh?
Oh, yes, many. Yeah.
What happened at that mole? Remember the story with the mole?
Oh, the mole. That was a strange story. I was on my way to... I went down to the basement where the garage was, and I was taking the children to school, and the whole basement was flooded. And after I'd taken them to school, I phoned the plumber, and I said to him, come and check if there's something wrong. And I felt the water, it was warm water. So it was the geyser that was leaking, so I thought. So the plumber came and he said, no, there's no leak there. It's coming from somewhere underneath the floor, underneath the garage floor. And so he started digging and he found a place, you will not believe this, where a mole had gone from outside underneath the concrete foundation.
They were very deep foundations.
Yes, because it was a double story. And so he'd gone underneath there, he chewed his way through the concrete, and in the process, he actually chewed through a pipe.
A copper pipe
that was coming from the geyser. So it was a hot water pipe. And so the hot boiling water must have killed him because he found the mole lying there next to the pipe.
And but the holes were in the pipe.
The holes were in the pipe, yes. And so he'd gone through that. And this plumber said to me, this is very strange. This is not normal. And then a few weeks later, a pipe burst. You were still overseas and a pipe burst in the house and the whole house was flooded. All the furniture was floating around and I was working. And so the neighbor phoned me and the neighbor said, come and see, the water's coming out of your house. And so again, I called the plumber and he said, this is very strange. You've been having a lot of bad luck.
And another time I was in Iceland doing a recording.
Yes.
And a troop of baboons.
Yes, a troop of baboons came through our house. They managed to lift the sliding window. We had a sliding windows, lifted off, and he went inside and he went and opened another window. He's so clever. And the whole troop came inside the house. And so they opened the taps. Again, the whole house was flooded.
He seems to love water, this enemy, right?
Yeah, well, the world was destroyed by a flood, so maybe the devil thinks he can destroy us with a flood. So, yeah, it was always water
and
damage.
And it was always one turmoil after the other.
One thing after the other.
Why didn't you just say, I'm going to give up?
Well, we were fighting for a cause, and we were fighting to bring people to the truth. Like the Lord, in His grace, brought the truth to us. We wanted to bring the truth to those who are in the same world that we were, the occult world, the atheistic world, the evolution world.
And the way in which God gave us information is often so amazing. How we got information about the occult world. Number one, I had all the information from your father.
Yes.
Then we had that amazing thing that happened in one of the great occult houses,
mm-hmm.
where one of the channels spoke to us.
That temple.
And we were talking about Blavatsky, and I wanted the books in order to prove certain points. And he wanted to give me any other book but those, and I said, no, I want those. And then he said, aha, you want Blavatsky, then you have arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very next thing that happens, you come to the church and the church leader says to you, why do you talk about Blavatsky? Nobody knows about Blavatsky. She's not important. You are off the rail. But the top channel of the continent said, then you have arrived.
And when Ellen G. White became the prophet of the last final church, Blavatsky came at the same time.
At exactly the same time.
Deception.
And how in the middle of the night, Freemasons would bring us information.
Mm-hmm.
And how the Lord opened doors that we got pictures and proof of whatever we were saying. And so the series actually was always confirmed to me.
And
this is the truth. This is the enemy of God.
What about the man that grabbed you into the closet?
Yes.
And gave you all that information?
Yes, of how Catholicism and the secret societies are linked together. And how he sent that fax one night. And I heard the fax machine go. And it rolled down the passage. It was such a long fax and gave all the associations of the Masonic and
the Catholic
and Catholic connections. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, they tell the world that you should steer free of Freemasonry while they themselves are the rulers of it. So there are so many deceptions. And God in his grace gave us so much information. And it brought us into a lot of trouble. But why I trust that it is from God, that God gave us this information to expose the error and highlight the light, is because so many precious souls over the years have embraced the truth. Mm-hmm. And those to me are the fruits. If there are fruits, and some of those people are today members in good and regular standing, some of them working very hard to further the Lord's vineyard. In the end, we will be able to say, heaven was cheap enough. And no matter what opposition they throw at you, no matter what they say, this is the truth. And if you stick to it, then one day God will be able to say, well done, good and faithful servant.
But remember that everyone who shall be found with a wedding garment on will have come out of great tribulation. The mighty surges of temptation will beat upon all, but the long night of watching, of toil, of hardship is nearly past. Christ is soon to come. Get ready. The angels of God are seeking to attract you from yourself and from earthly things. Let them not labor in vain. Become our motto. If you put one foot ahead of the other one,
eventually you'll get there
because you don't give up.
No,
we
so
never give
never,
up.
Ever, ever give up. If you've found truth, then don't sell it. If you have found the pearl of great price, don't sell it for any price. You'll have many hagglers around you, you'll have many opponents. And all of them will tell you that you must sell the great treasure that you found in the field. The field, of course, is the Word of God. The treasure is the truth of the gospel. The treasure is Jesus Christ. Once you have found him, once you have found the everlasting gospel, you don't give it up. No matter if the Sanhedrin shouts at you, well, the devil makes your life hard, just never, ever give it up. Jesus didn't give up, did he?
No.
No.
The way that leads to the city of God, there are no difficulties which those who trust in him may not overcome. There are no dangers which they may not escape. There is not a sorrow, not a grievance, not a human weakness for which he has not provided a remedy.